on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! Hello, listener, and welcome to a very, very, very special Maynard's Malaise. Cast your mind back 20 years ago, before you were probably even born. About 20 years ago, to this very day, pretty much, I was interviewing Douglas Adams in the William Street Studios, King's Cross, of Triple J. It was national at the time. I was doing the breakfast show, and we had him in at about 8:30, and we were going to play some songs and talk to Douglas. But of course, he was such a good guest, we just played one song and then spoke to him for half an hour to ask about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy video game that was a line command game at the time. And we just had a great time. And I made a reel-to-reel tape of that at the time and put it away somewhere. And it's probably still at my mum's place. My mum's being a hoarder, can't find it. Luckily, listening that morning was Kylie Sturgis. Kylie was about to head off to school, and before she did, she set her cassette tape a-running. Now, it's not the best recording. We've cleaned it up as best we can. And sure, I'm not the best interviewer in the world. In fact, I was a bit nervous about the whole thing, and that comes across, but it was Douglas Adams, for goodness sake. He was in Australia at the time to record parts of Last Chance to See. And I think The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul was the book he had out at the time. It was one I was reading, anyway. You know, I opened with a stupid question and continued with several stupid questions, and luckily the audience came in on the phone to help me out, and they asked some great questions, and every single question you threw at Douglas, he was perfect. And afterwards, he gave me one of my most prized possessions. I have a black and white photo of Douglas Adams signed by him that says, "To Maynard, a very strange way to wake up." And I reckon every time I'm feeling even the slightest bit down, I look at that photo, and I went, wow, Douglas Adams called me strange. If Douglas Adams is calling me strange, I must have achieved something in my life. Let's go back 20 years. Enjoy the interview.
How come Douglas Adams comes in this year and I mentioned Barry Crocker? Anyway, Barry Crocker, a great singing star, Douglas of Australia. Douglas Adams, hello, how are you?
Oh, I shall be fine once the first bit of caffeine hits the first brain cell.
We've sent out for stimulants and some will be coming in very soon.
Come in brain.
That was that Mary J. Star. They're doing a Hunters and Collectors cover there. Throw Your Arms Around Me. Originally recorded by Frank Sinatra, of course. You a big Frank Sinatra fan?
I'm big.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes a Frank Sinatra fan. I'm a big comma Frank Sinatra fan.
We don't actually talk much about music. Douglas Adams doesn't talk much about music because you're a writer.
Do you?
Okay, what's your favourite music? What do you listen
to? Oh God!
Come on, spill the beans.
Well, I suppose my two absolute favourite things begin with B, and that's Bach and the Beatles.
Really?
Mm.
And you don't move any more recent forward than the Beatles, don't you?
Yes, a little bit. Not that much further forward. Elvis Costello, Randy Newman. Okay, he was around the 60s, but he's just produced one of his best albums ever a couple of years ago, so, I mean, that's okay. But, I don't know, I find, since the onset of rap music, I cannot listen to rock radio anymore, because I just can't stand it.
Well, is it, what is it, the cultural references in it there, the actual beat?
I like a nice tune, you know. You like a nice tune.
What's your favourite song of all time, if you were voting? We'll just do...
John Lennon's Woman, I think.
Definitely?
That would be one of them. What else? I Want You to Hurt Like I Do by Randy Newman would be one of them.
Don't know that one myself.
Oh, it's a killer.
I mean, beyond short people, I don't know much about Randy Newman.
Listen, the album Trouble in Paradise, which he did in 1983, is an absolute immense classic. But the two best songs I think he ever did were on the new album, which is otherwise less good, and that's Land of Dreams. So I Want You to Hurt Like I Do and Roll With the Punches are two extraordinary songs. My best album of all time is John Lennon's Plastic Ono Band.
What, Shaved Fish or something?
No. This is the album he released just after the Beatles split up, where he just sort of finally sort of spills the beans on his sort of complete emotional wreckedness. While he was in sort of primal scream therapy and so on, and he just recorded a punk album about 5 years before anybody else invented punk.
And when you're listening to your music, you're pretty busy there. To me, you might have a bit of free time because, I mean, Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul was not exactly a thick airport novel. It was a bit of a shorty there.
You see, the thing is, do you know that thing that Voltaire said at the bottom? He was writing a letter to a friend, and in a postscript to it. He said, I'm sorry this letter is so long. I didn't have time to make it shorter.
Like that?
Yeah.
So you throw out a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, when I write, I rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. I remember starting Life, the Universe and Everything. The first 20 pages, I rewrote 20 times. And at the end of the 20th draft, it was then time to move on to the second sentence. So that's why they're short novels, because, I mean, they just go through a huge amount of rewriting.
Is the family,
so it takes a long time.
Does your family get shirty with you? I mean, like, you like
lost
emotional.
They've
all pinged off, have they? Oh, dear. It's taken its toll being a writer.
Yeah, writers are not pleasant people to live with, actually. Because they're grumpy and sort of work all hours and sort of don't want to go out and they eat too many donuts.
Look, you've been pretty happy, like, going around the world here for last chance to see. Now, why did you decide to cruise around the world?
Well, I need to get out of the house a bit. I was... well, there are all sorts of reasons. The first was, I mean, about 5 years ago, I was sent to Madagascar by a magazine in London on the grounds that I didn't know anything about it. So I went, and it was actually a most extraordinary experience, and because I was sent out to look for an animal, they sent along a zoologist from the World Wildlife Fund, who is Mark Carwardian, which is where I first met him. And he and I got on extremely well. So after the extraordinary experience of Madagascar, which is just an absolute mind-blower, I thought, I want to do more of this. So I phoned up Mark and said, do you want to do a whole project? You know, go around the world for a year looking for rare animals. And he said, well, that's my job.
Yeah. Well, on the back cover of Last Chance, on the front cover, there's a very nice Gila monster on the front.
That's a Komodo dragon lizard with a nice little tasteful drop of saliva dropping from its jaws.
Mm-hmm, nice. On the back, there's a picture of Mark in some mud, and there's a caption, Mark demonstrating the most effective way of catching the world's most common disease after tooth decay. What is he catching with his feet in the mud?
Bilharzia.
Which is, I'm sorry?
It's the second... Bilharzia is the second most common disease in the world after tooth decay.
And what is it, by the way?
Well, actually, if you hand the book over, I'll just find the description of it, actually, because it's pretty nasty.
I mean, well, could I get it? I mean, yeah.
Probably not from, well, looking around the studio, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a typical ABC studio. There's a bit of moss growing in the corner.
Hang on. Let me just try. It's rather nasty, but it'll take me a while to find it. Let me look for it later.
We'll go to a song, come back and find out what Bilharzia is. And if you've got any questions for Douglas about, you know, medical things, book things, no Doctor Who questions. I mean, I can do this for Douglas. If you actually ask a Doctor Who question, we'll hang up on you. Because we're that kind of people here at Triple J. The number's 008-021-060 on the East Coast. This is at this stage. 008-021-060. Questions for Douglas Adams about anything? You want to take questions on anything, Douglas?
Anything other than Doctor Who, yes.
24 to 9. Oh, from Blue Sky Mining Mill. Oh, you like that, Douglas?
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, King of the Mountain. Yeah, I was just saying, whenever they release something in England, they always get slagged off Midnight Oil, I've found, you know, for some reason.
Reviewers, you know.
Yeah, what's your relationship with reviewers to your books?
It goes up and down, actually. I mean, everybody has a sort of cyclical thing, which actually doesn't, you know, bear any relation to which was the good book and which was the bad book. I mean, they, you know, the critics love you for a bit, then they decide, okay, it's time to hate you. And actually, the reviews in England of this book were actually largely by people who had hated me for a bit and were extremely irritated to discover they thought this was a very good book and had to say so rather. You know, there were words like infuriatingly all over the place.
Now, with Last Chance to See, that was that disease we were talking about earlier, the second...
Bilharzia, yes. Well, it's a disease you get from wading through infected water. Tiny snails breed in the water and they act as hosts to tiny parasitic worms that latch onto your skin. When the water evaporates, they burrow in and attack your bladder and intestines. You'll know if you've got it because it's like really bad flu with diarrhea and you also piss blood.
Hey, that's a pretty wild thing to have.
So it's worse than tooth decay.
I think I actually could get it in ABC studio, actually. There's a few things at the back here. We'll play a bit of a jingle, and we're going to be back with lots and lots of callers in a minute, Douglas.
Okay.
Are you ready for them?
Just about. I've got some coffee now, so I'm
Triple J listeners can be really ugly, Douglas. Are you sure?
Okay, well, bring them on, you know.
Inside a bubble, if you believe, the dreams are there.
wonderful, the wonderful wonder world. The world really is a lovely place, Douglas Adams.
Oh, hello. Yes, hi. Sorry.
I think I was just kind of making a broad sweeping statement.
Good morning.
Yeah, who's our first caller here? Let's have a look at the list. We've got Rod. Morning, Rod. How are you?
Good, Maynard, and you?
Oh, pretty good. What's your question for Douglas Adams?
Oh, Maynard, first of all, that Wonderworld theme.
I know, we had to have something so we could tell Douglas how to run his headphones and things, you see. And it was the first thing I put my hands on.
Oh, you're joking.
Oh, come on. Do you mean...
That was the first thing you put your hands on, Maynard?
The first thing, I mean, I could look. It was either that or this. I'll show you. It was either that or this.
I just wish I could say something nice about Maynard.
But it was either that or Barry Crocker, you see.
No, I'd prefer Barry still, then.
Yeah, but Barry doesn't run for a minute.
Oh, fair enough.
Anyway. Okay, anyway, look, we had a bit of a fill there. Even Angela Caterns didn't like it. She came in and poked me in the eye.
She's from Wonderworld, isn't she?
Is she? Oh, I didn't know that. Were you on Wonderworld? See, I was in Newcastle. I never saw Wonderworld. Oh, right. Hey, was he really nice to the dog or not? She's shaking her
head. Can I ask something at this point?
Yes?
What is Wonderworld?
Oh, look, it was an Australian kids' TV show, and Angela was one of the people on it, apparently. And it was this guy with a big dog, and he'd talk about all wonderful things, wouldn't he, Rod?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, he used to laugh all the time, like, mental disability. He laughed. Anyway, go on, Douglas. What's your question for Douglas? Come on.
Douglas seems pretty interested in chaos theory. He's written a prelude to Gleick's book, and most of his novels seem pretty chaotic. I was wondering, apart from providing a reason to have plots that wander all over the place with no apparent excuse, do you find any other practical uses for chaos theory?
It's not a question of a practical use for chaos theory. I mean, the extraordinary thing about chaos theory is it explains... science that we've known up till chaos theory tends to sort of explain what happens in laboratories, whereas chaos theory explains what happens in the rest of the world. So, I mean, it's not so much one has a use for it. It's merely a sort of tool for understanding what's going on around you.
But only explains it in so much as saying, well, we don't really know what it's doing, but chaos says that we're not going to be able to predict it. So
well, it's deterministic but unpredictable, which is an extraordinary new notion that we weren't really prepared for.
Yeah.
The thing is, I mean, there are all sorts of sort of deep patterns in it that enable us to analyse it. We just can't say what it's going to do, that's all.
There you go, Ron. I mean, that's the best answer you can get on chaos theory.
Fair enough.
A couple of years at university probably wouldn't hurt, right?
I've done too many.
Brendan, morning, Brendan. How are you?
Good morning, mate. Well, thank you.
Now, you want to talk about whales.
Yeah. In Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul, Thor had to count the stones in whales.
Yeah.
And he said he lost count in Mid-Glamorgan. Now, did he really lose count or did he...
Oh, no, well, hang on. I'm just trying to remember back to the book because a couple of years ago I wrote it. But, I mean, I think he actually says at the end he did actually count them all, but he wasn't going to tell anybody else because if he'd been to all the trouble to count them, he didn't see why anybody else would have the information without going through it themselves.
Yeah, no, it's just he tells Kate at one stage that she asks him and he says, I've already told you, I lost count in Mid-Glamorgan, think. And it sort of seems as if you've sort of hidden it in the book somewhere, but you haven't.
Oh, God, I can't remember now. Have you got a copy lying around?
Oh,
it's a very interesting plot point, and I'm glad you brought it up, and I don't have...
hey, Brendan, you win, Brendan. We've got Cliff on line three. Hiya, Cliff, how are you?
Not bad, yeah.
Okay, got a Marvin question.
Marvin, yeah, look, Douglas, I'm really curious. I'm from Canberra, and I'm a public servant. And
uh-oh. Do those two go together?
Yes, well, definitely.
Definitely, yes. And
Australian.
Well, you said I'm really curious. I come from Canberra.
Well, we're not generally curious in Canberra, but I haven't been in the public service all my life, you see, so I have some brain left. And
this is a demonstration of it.
Oh, vaguely, yes. I'm on my third copy of Hitchhiker's Guide. I've worn out too. And I've always been able to relate to Marvin, and I was really curious where you got the inspiration from.
Well, the inspiration came directly, actually. There was a person I know called Andrew Marshall, who is a comedy writer. We're a depressive bunch. And he was exactly like that. It's funny because a lot of people say, oh, I know somebody like that. When Andrew's wife first heard the show, she said, ah, that's my husband. He is now her ex-husband. But he was the sort of guy, you're always very sort of nervous about sort of introducing to people in a bar. You know, you'd sort of, there'd be a bunch of people there, and Andrew would come up and you'd say, Andrew, meet, you know, John and Susan, whoever it would be. And there'd be a pause, and then Andrew would say something so devastatingly rude to them that it would be stunned silence. And then Andrew would sort of slope off to a corner of the bar and sit nursing a pint of beer all by himself. And I'd go over and say, Andrew, what on earth was the point of saying that? You say, what's the point of not saying it? What's the point of anything at all? And so I basically based Marvin on him. And in fact, I originally was going to call the character Marshall just to make sure he got the point. But on the way to the studio, actually, for the first recording of that part, the producer said to me, you know, Marshall, it's a bit of an awkward word, isn't it? Because it looks as if it's meant to have other connotations, you know, which are irrelevant. So do you want to think about that? And I said, OK, yeah, let's call him Marvin. And that was how the name came about.
Ooh. And we've got Chrissy on line 4, wants to ask about Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi.
I know it's going to be another plot question, isn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, you write such complicated ones, you've got to expect this, Douglas.
I couldn't believe it. I actually just finished it last night, reading it, and I just woke up this morning and heard you were being interviewed and thought, why did you write that?
Why did I write
the book? It's my job.
No. Where did you get the idea for that?
Oh, God, from all over the place. I mean, I remember, years ago when I was at school and I first had to read Kubla Khan. And there's this extraordinary story that comes with the poem about the fact that Coleridge was asleep in a drugged state and he dreamt this whole poem. And he woke up. And he started to write it down, and he got 300... I mean, because he could remember the whole thing absolutely clearly. He'd invented in his dream. And he started to write it down, and he got about 300 lines in, and suddenly a person arrived on business from Porlock and detained him upwards of an hour, at the end of which he couldn't remember any of the rest of it. That always haunted me, that story. I wondered, who was this person from Porlock, and why did he come? Did he mean to prevent the poem being written?
How's that for an answer?
Well, that's great. He came from 4 billion years ago.
I hope it makes your day easy to get into.
It will now, I'm sure.
Okay, we've got John who wants to ask a bit more about Dirk Gently as well. Hi, John.
Hey there, Groovy Maynard.
Hi, Groovy Man. How are you?
Yes, thanks, mate.
Pretty good. Okay, Kooky Boy, chance to talk to Douglas Adams.
G'day, Douglas. I just want to know if you're
going to
do any more Dirk Gently novels.
I expect so. It's not sort of on the immediate agenda, because the next thing I'm writing is another Hitchhiker novel. And
that sounds a bit dangerous, doing another one, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose I'm seriously going to have to think about this word trilogy, which has been a bit of a hang-up.
Five-part trilogy.
And I know a bit about the novel I'm going to write after that. I suspect it'll be a while before I get back to Dirk Gently, because because at one point I got very fed up with Hitchhiker and swore I didn't want to do it again. Now 6 years have passed, so
that's what I heard.
More interested in doing it. Largely, I was waiting for everyone to stop asking me to do it. And, you know, a perverse lot, writers. So I didn't want to get fed up with Dirk Gently in the same way I did get fed up with Hitchhiker. So, he'll rest for a bit. But I'm very fond of that character, so I'm sure I'll do it again.
You're great. Keep it up.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, John. I've got, is it Amanda? Amanda on the phone. Let's talk about the Babel fish.
Okay.
Hey, this is a great thing. Amanda.
Hi, Maynard.
Hiya.
I just wanted to ask you, I know that you helped to write the computer game Douglas, and
yeah.
I want to ask you, can you get to the end of it? And how do you get the Babel fish from not flying across the room all the time?
Right.
I think you should explain this. A lot of people like myself who aren't computer literate don't know what she's on about.
Well, there's a computer game I did based on Hitchhiker, and one of the most difficult problems in it is how you get hold of the Babel fish. Because when you sort of press the button that it comes out, it starts sort of flying around the room and other robots come out and sort of start cleaning it up and yanking it away. I could tell you the whole sequence, but I think I won't. But I'll tell you that the most important thing you have to have with you is your junk mail. You have to have brought the junk mail with you all the way from Earth.
Right.
Because you need to use this to distract the cleaning robots from picking up the Babel fish.
Sounds like the stupidest computer program I've ever heard.
It is. It's the only computer program that deliberately lies to you.
There's no mention of
it. It's user mendacious. I beg your pardon?
There's no mention of the junk mail at all. No.
When you first start the game, and you're sort of running downstairs to stop the bulldozer coming over your house, there's just some junk mail on the doormat, and if you don't pick that up, you know, at the moment, you know, your house is about to be demolished, if you don't stop to pick up your junk mail, then you lose everything later on.
That's enough to make me go and buy a computer.
Can you get all the way to the end?
I don't suppose I could, actually. I mean, the thing is, actually, when you're sitting writing it, you're sort of inventing all these puzzles, and the next day you go on to the next puzzle, a week later you can't remember what puzzle you put in a week earlier. So people come and ask you, how do you do this? Oh, I say, I can't quite remember.
So we've got time for one more call from Tim to talk about the group Disaster Area, which is one of my favourite concepts from the books, too. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Do you want to be in Disaster Area, do you?
No, I want to know if Douglas is going to market any of the things like Disaster Area or the actual book, just things within the novel. I mean, there's a lot of marketing possibilities there.
Am I talking to a businessman here? No particular plan. The only bit of marketing we did, we actually did a bath towel based on Hitchhiker. I mean, this is the only... I mean, it was a radio program, then a book, then a television series, a computer game, a stage show, and a bath towel, which made a very absorbing read.
And what about...
Thank you. I don't have any... Well, I don't know about Disaster Area. I'm going to wait till I become a rock star, which is one of the things on my agenda. I'm deciding I'm going to be a rock star. So I might make a Disaster Area album.
So keep hanging out for Tim.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Well, that's all the calls we've got time for this morning. It's just been great chatting away to you, Douglas. Tell me, there was a cardboard cutout of your mum in a bookshop for Long Dark Fig. Was that actually your mum?
That was actually my mum, yes.
She was pretty chuffed to be in the bookshop, wasn't she?
Well, actually, the thing she loved about it was it gave her a wonderful excuse for jumping up and down and getting very irritated about it all and sort of pretending to make a big fuss about how awful it was to have herself all plastered around bookshops, but she loved it, really.
Well, it's probably going to be a while before we actually get you in Australia again. So last chance to see is a book that's out now.
That's right. Yes.
Next one's going to be
another Hitchhiker book. Another book that's out right now as well, which has just come out. It's called The Deeper Meaning of Lyf. Did you ever encounter The Meaning of Lyf?
I did. I had trouble with it because I didn't know any of the English cities that.
It doesn't matter actually. I mean, because they're just. Most English people wouldn't know because we went for most obscure names. We just like the words. That's all. So there are a lot of American ones. Actually, in the new one, there are a lot of Australian ones because we did the. The new one includes most of the old one, but it's a whole lot more as well. It's generally sort of bigger, fatter, glossier, harder, and more expensive. We did all the new stuff actually on the beach in Sydney. So
Have you actually got a definition for Wangaratta or something like that?
I don't think we've got Wangaratta now.
Oh gee,
maybe in the next one, and then this is The Deeper Meaning of Lyf. I guess the next one, I don't know, it'll be larger than Lyf or something.
And have you got a title for the next Hitchhiker's book?
No, I haven't. It's beginning to bug me actually because I should have one by now, and I can't find one.
Is the title often first and the story later with you? Is it?
Well, there's a sense in which until you've got the title, you don't quite believe in the sort of proper existence of the book. Generally, I mean, all the books so far have been, well, except for Dirk Gently, all the books have been quotes from one of my earlier books, including Long Dark Tea to Mother Soul, which is one that people didn't necessarily find the quote. It came from Life, the Universe and everything. So I'm trying to find another quote from the earlier books that will suit this book, and I haven't found one yet.
And so after the next Hitchhiker's book, you're working on another one already, and what's it going to be?
This is going to be a kind of thriller, and it's going to be very different. And it's going to be set in Brazil and the Ivory Coast and Easter Island. Well, put it this way. When I used to write history essays at school, I used to put jokes in. My history master used to say, fewer jokes, more facts, please, Adams. So, I mean, basically, I always write comedy of one kind or another. But, this will be more of a thriller as well.
Now, if people want to chat to you in person, so I see you're doing personal appearances around everywhere, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Are you being mobbed? People touching you? Tearing clothing?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Tweaking your nipple, all that kind of thing. Right? Well, you can tweak Douglas Adams' nipple at Dimmick's City Store between 12:30 and 1:30 in Sydney today.
Actually, once when I was doing his book signing up in Brisbane, I had a wonderful thing. A woman came up and sort of laid herself out on the table and asked me to sign her stomach, which is very exciting.
Wow,
so I keep on rushing back to Australia for more book signings, and it never happens again. So
we've got actually last call from Tony here. Morning, Tony.
Good morning.
Hi, Tony, our last caller. What's the question for Adam?
Well, going back to the original very beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide, there was a little passing skit, which was the Basingstoke roundabout, somewhere near on the way to the Barnard Star.
That's right.
Was there a reason why you picked the Basingstoke roundabout? Seeing it's the origin of my birth, and I thought...
Oh, really? Oh, well, it's just, my parents lived down at home in Dorset.
Right.
And I'd often hitchhike between London and Dorset.
And you'd been confused before.
And Basingstoke was somewhere I always seemed to get stuck. So
it's sort of like endless roundabouts convoluting on each other.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Well, there you go. So building on all your experiences from life and in Australia, you're going to have a book coming out real soon. Are they going to mention Australia in the next book?
This one actually has major mention of Australia. The next one. Not the next Hitchhiker book, because that's set on the other side of the galaxy. I mean, I might throw in a quick mention of Australia, you know, the one after that, I don't know, it might do.
Look, Douglas Adams, thanks for coming in this morning. It's almost been Maynard's book. I feel like I've been to university because I've had you on here this morning, Douglas. I mean, it's like suddenly I've got a tertiary education. It's great. Thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Cheers,
Douglas
thanks.
Adams.
On maynard.com.au. Hey, you!